Talk Radio, a forum for new thoughts and fresh ideas, a place to learn and an opportunity to express yourself. Get involved with our newsmakers and our newsbreakers of today and tomorrow. Talk Radio invites your participation. Talk Radio is
Bill Jenkins.
Welcome to a Saturday night. I am Bill Jenkins, and it's time for Open Mind, a Saturday night institution. I'm glad to have you aboard. It's one of those nights that we like to stretch that reality box of yours just a little bit. Reality box, in case you haven't been with us before, is something we all have. It's a window through which we view reality, but we find that that reality box of ours is shaped by a number of things. Our living experiences, our education, formal and informal, our religion, a lot of things. And if we get information that's outside of that reality box, we immediately decide that whoever's telling us that is demented or trying to lie to us or is crazy, you know, needs to be locked up, even if it's the perception of our own senses. And what we're about is to provide you with new information that most likely will fall outside of your reality box. But believe me, we're not ready to get locked up, and what we're telling you is basically true. If I were to tell you that there are flying saucers and alien beings in Earth space for a long time, some of you may agree with me. And some of you may say, oh, no, that's not so. Most people will say that's not so because the government has not told us so. And if it was so, our government would have told us all about it. This is the feeling that most people have. Somehow or another, it becomes the truth if the government says it so. Well, it just so happens that the government has lied to us about the aspect of the flying saucer, and they've been doing it for many, many years, and we're going to prove that to you, I think, tonight, or at least give you something to really think about. And to help you think, there's a gentleman who's written a book that I hope that you get as soon as you can, if you can find it. It seems to be hard to get all at once. The book is called Clear Intent. The author is Larry Fawcett, and Larry is on the phone with us, speaking from the East Coast. Larry, welcome to Open Mind. Have we got you punched in? Hello there, Larry.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
Fine and dandy. Are there flying saucers, Larry?
Well, I believe they're real.
You believe they're real?
And so does the government.
Oh, the government. Why do they keep saying it's not so?
Well, this started in the early years of UFO sightings, where many people in the early 50s and late 40s began reporting UFOs, if you will, or flying saucers or flying discs.
Mm-hmm.
When the government realized that they had a potential here, a very big potential, in the sense that here was a phenomena that was outdistancing our latest aircraft and technology at that time, and they couldn't understand why our latest aircraft couldn't catch these things, if you will.
And
they began thinking on the lines of weapons delivery systems. And that's where the cloak of secrecy began dropping around the UFO phenomena.
Well, we read last week on the air a note by none other than George C. Marshall, who was at that time, I believe, a four-star general. I believe he was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in which he talked openly and candidly about these craft. They didn't know whether they were reconnaissance craft or what, but he felt that they were preparing to make a contact. We also had a note from another four-star general, Douglas MacArthur, in which he said our next battle will be fought against them in space. Now, these were back in the late 40s and early 50s that these things were said. So there was a time that the government was being honest and candid with us about the fact that there were alien beings.
That's correct. Even at one time, they had prepared a document, which was called the Estimate of the Situation, which was prepared by the Air Force, which actually, at that time, the document stated that UFOs were real. They were from extraterrestrial origin. Now, this document went all the way up to then Vannevar Bush, who battled it down, if you will, and said and didn't accept that document as something that should be put out to the public. And it was from that point on that the secrecy began and is still going on as of today.
Was there a feeling at a time that the American people just were not ready to accept the fact that there was a civilization that was more advanced than ours and that we would run amok in the streets and tear down our society and our economy?
Well, that was some of the beliefs. They believed that if indeed that the American public was told that UFOs were real, that certain things would occur. One, that money markets would fall. religion as we know it would fall, and other chaos would occur. People would, there would be people just panicking, similar to the 1939 Orson Welles radio program of War of the Worlds, if you remember back then. But we feel that we've come a long way since then. The softening up effect has occurred with the release of the movies Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T., if you will. People seem to be now accepting the UFO and the extraterrestrial hypothesis more and more.
Well, I've seen a number of surveys where more than half of the people in the United States do believe in them, that they are, that they do exist. Others are not sure, but if they would tend to believe that they're out there. Very few people just flat categorically say that they don't exist, that Earth is the center of God's creation.
Yes, that has been said, and many reputable scientists will tell you that we are the only ones within our galaxy anyway that can harbor life. It has to be ambiguous of us to think that we are the only ones within this great universe of ours. We are just now entering ourselves into voyages out into the beyond, if you will, and we are learning things every day from our space program, which points to that there is possibility of life on other planets.
Well, we see some strange things on the other planets. I think, for instance, the pyramids and the face on Mars.
That's correct.
Are quite fascinating. Here is a perfect face, about a mile and a half long. Two eyes, nose, tears coming down one side, the computer enhancement shows. And all of the rest of the terrain there, it's sort of a flat plain, but it's on the edge of a rugged area. And to look upon that and say that's a natural formation would be like looking upon Mount Rushmore and saying that that's the natural work of wind and water erosion.
I agree with you, Bill. Yes, and like I said, the shots are opening up many marvels to us. When we went past Saturn and seen all them things which we thought was dust at one time, we are now learning that all our thinking is absolutely wrong. There's something else out there. And we are finding that 20 or 30 years ago, scientists had wrote to the president and said we'd never put a man on the moon. And as you know, we've been on the moon. And we are going out to other places right now.
They're even talking about going back there again.
That's correct.
Why did they stop going in the first place?
I couldn't tell you.
It certainly wasn't money.
No, it certainly wasn't.
That's another story, isn't it, Larry?
Yes, it is, Bill.
About the destructive end of the Apollo program. Cost us more to wind it down than it was to keep it going. Well, we have a lot of things and a lot of ground to cover tonight. Larry Fawcett is my guest. He's written a brilliant book called Clear Intent. Clear Intent deals primarily with information out of the government that was obtained from the Freedom of Information Act. You know, for the government to say that there is no such thing as flying saucers and then give you a document about it that's been all X'd out that you can't read anything of it, what is the secret if it's not there in the first place?
Well, that's what we say. If there are no UFOs, why all the secrecy? Why doesn't the government just open up all its files, everything it has on UFOs, to the public, and they won't do that?
Well, you want to touch on some of the things that those files are telling us in just a moment?
Sure, I'd be glad to.
Okay. You know, holiday is our time in Los Angeles. I'm KABC. It's Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins, and delighted to have with me Larry Fawcett. Larry has authored a book called Clear Intent. He's been involved in the investigation of the UFO phenomenon for a couple of decades now. Was recently involved in the Brewster sightings. You want to tell us just a little bit about what was going on in Brewster, New York, over the summertime, Larry?
Sure, Bill. Well, there's been always a fallacy that UFOs are not seen over populated areas, and this is a very good case to counter that that comment. During the months of July, June, July, and August, down in Westchester County in lower New York and the lower part of Connecticut, thousands upon thousands of people were reporting seeing a flying triangle, if you will, almost nightly, very low level. The object was very big in size, some estimations even as the size of three football fields. These would come in the twilight hours and sometimes even in broad daylight. Would come down over the Westchester County Highway. Cars would stop along the highway to watch this thing go over very silently. There were many photographs taken of the objects, including some very good video VHS films, if you will, on the object. In some incidences, the objects were reported over the nuclear facility station at Indian Point just outside of Peekskill, New York. Caused quite a stir there, in fact. The object stopped and hovered over Reactor 3 in that area. The security guards, which are part of the New York police down there, were so panicked that they issued out shotguns to all their personnel. In fact, they were afraid that there was going to be a penetration down into the nuclear area there.
Yeah, if you don't understand it, shoot it.
That was the philosophy that they were taking at the time. Also, things began happening with the reactor while the object was over the atomic plant itself. Things began going haywire inside. We are just now in the process of filing FOIA request on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in Washington on the incident and with the Indian Point Nuclear Power Station. The information on that case came from the security guards themselves who were witnesses to this event. They even scrambled a helicopter from Fort Smith, New York, to come down and assist them in identifying what this intruder was.
I understand that people were lined up along the freeway there. Well, you don't call it a freeway. Was it a turnpike? Or
Westchester County Parkway.
Parkway, yes. Thousands of people were seeing it. We're in an area where sort of a sousier area of town there. IBM executives live out there. They were seeing it. We're not talking about little old farmers in the backwoods of nowhere.
Oh, no, we had engineers. We had computer operators. We had police officers. We had lawyers. Everybody from every walks of life. Engineers, airplane pilots, even military personnel.
Now, it's curious to me, Larry, why this story was not played up much in the media. I think there was one story that we did here, working on just some of the information that you gave me and that J. Allen Hynek gave me, talking to the chief of police there in the village of Brewster. He said, well, he thought it was those guys flying at night in tight formation with their little airplanes.
Yeah, ultralights.
Their little ultralights.
The only problem was that the nights that these things were seen, winds were about 40 knots.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know anything about flying, at 40 knots, even a Cessna would have a hard time flying in formation at that wind velocity.
Chances are they'd stall out.
That's correct. And ultralights are very light aircraft. People were reporting gigantic lights on these things.
Mm-hmm.
From my understanding of ultralights, they can't carry too much weight on them, number one. Second of all, they do make sound. You do hear engine noises, and people were reporting a silent object, no noise whatsoever. There were a flight of Cessnas in one of the sightings that tried to create sightings, if you will, but these were found out right away.
Some of the boys having fun with the phenomena that was going on.
That's correct. And it's funny that you should mention that no news coverage reached the coast out there, because down here, all the papers had front page stories, including the New York Times, the Daily News, all the major papers and television stations down here carried it.
Well, I asked the desk in New York if they could give us a story on it. They said, oh, yeah, they know what's going on, but, you know, there was something happening in the Middle East, and that was what was on today's agenda, and they just didn't want to mess with it. But you would have thought that the television networks would have certainly had this out all over the country.
Well, I know I attended a seminar down in Brewster. We gathered close to 900 witnesses at this seminar to come and tell the public what they were seeing at that time, and that was covered by basically every major network and newspaper down in the New York area.
And it ended up on the cutting room floor for the most
probably
part.
Probably.
Isn't that kind of an amazing thing?
Well, that's the problem with UFOs, and it's that aura around it was created in the early years. Once the government, in their studies, say, such as Project Blue Book, and which ended in 1969, once the government, who is the authority, by the way, said that UFOs weren't real, then the stories became not front page news anymore, but just little tiny articles, maybe 9 or 10 pages back. Or, in some incidences, the press just wouldn't touch it at all.
Or they would use it as a kicker at the end of their newscast.
That's correct.
Something to chuckle about. But it really isn't something to chuckle about at all.
No, it's a very serious problem.
And we don't know whether the problem, serious it probably is, but whether it is good serious or bad serious, do we?
Well, we contend through our investigation into the government's files that there is some cause for concern. And that is in the information that we found out, and not freely. We had to go to court to pry some of these documents from the military. First being told, say, by the Central Intelligence Agency when we began to probe them for documentation, with them telling us they had no UFO information. They were out of the UFO gathering information since 1952 with the closing of the Robinson panel, which they had some involvement in. We later found out from an agency telling us that they had no documents, and taking them to court, we surfaced over 1,500 documents out of them. Inadvertently, they released 10 National Security Agency documents. So we said, wow. We were always under the opinion, the public was, that Blue Book, Project Blue Book, was the only investigatory body within the government gathering UFO reports and studying them. Now we had an intelligence agency involved. Not only one, but two. When we began probing with FOIA under with the National Security Agency, they flatly denied, again, just like CIA did, that they had no documentation. They were never involved in the UFO phenomena whatsoever. Well, to make a long story short, we wound up in the Supreme Court of the United States in August of 1980, where we got the agency to admit that they did indeed have vast files on UFOs, and that they were withholding these files from the public with the court's sanctions due to national security implications. Now, from the government saying, after all their studies, like Project Blue Book, that UFOs posed no threat to the security of the United States, and now, with us in court, they're telling us that UFOs do pose a threat to the security of the United States.
Well, what happened to the term that there is no such thing as a UFO if it doesn't pose or does pose a threat to the security of the United States?
Well, that's what we tried to bring up in court, but the courts went along with the government in saying that a release of the information would jeopardize the agency's means of gathering intelligence and so forth, and that there were some indications of national security. We found that any time the military wanted to, or the security agencies, or the intelligence agencies, did not want public access into files, they would attach national security implications on them.
But how could this be, Larry, if the UFO does not exist?
Well, that's what we kept saying. How could you keep saying this if you're saying that UFOs do not exist? Now, we found, after hitting all the intelligence agencies, and we learned of intelligence agencies that we never thought existed, there was something like we turned up 50 intelligence gathering organizations within the American government which had involvement into the UFO phenomena, some that we never even heard of. One was so classified that we couldn't even get what the letters stand for the intelligence agency, if you will. To make a long story short, we gathered over something like 5,000 pages of documents that were released to us, which painted a very large picture that the government was indeed still actively investigating the UFOs, contrary to what they were telling the public, and that in some incidences there were national security implications, and them implications involved the overflights of the strategic air command bases during 1975, which the public was unaware of.
So there's a lot going on in this field.
That's correct.
And a lot of that has found its way into the pages of your book, Clear Intent.
Yes.
Published by Prentice Hall. I've had a number of my listeners tell me that they can't get the book out here, Larry.
Well, it's very hard to get the book, and we're having a lot of problems with it. It was released on the East Coast, and by the way, it's into its fifth printing already. It seems that every bookstore that gets it in can't keep it on its shelves. It just goes out very quickly. I do know that the California and L.A. is just beginning to get the books into some of the stores now out there, but everybody that is writing to us are telling us that they can't get the book at all.
But if they ask for it, they can get it for you at any good bookstore.
Yes, they can get it for you, or later on in the program, I'll give them an address where they can get the book.
Okay, we'll certainly do that in just a moment. I'm speaking to Larry Fawcett, the author of Clear Intent, which is a very clear and concise look at what the government is not telling you from the pages of the government's own documentation. As you can see, we're going around in circles, just a little bit of that. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, 3 hours on Saturday, December 1st, and I want you to be with us for that one. And some of these topics of discussion will be the expansion of consciousness, his tape program, the Gateway Weekend Workshop, also the out-of-body experience. Now, Bob Monroe's developed a series of tapes utilizing HemiSync, short for hemispheric synchronization. Now, these tapes and this technique offer much promise and potential, aiding the individual to use more and more of his brain power. These tapes are available for sale and for home use. The HemiSync tapes form the basis of the Gateway Weekend Workshops. Participants of the workshop experience tape exercises and share in group discussions, all aiding them to develop, explore, and apply expanded states of consciousness. The next three-day Gateway Workshop is December 7th, 8th, and 9th. You should go if you can. For more information on the tapes and certainly that workshop, why don't you call this number, area code 213-393-9405. Let me give it to you again. They're ready to talk to you right now, by the way. Area code 213-393-9405. And that one is a must-do, if you will.
Look, you have a beautiful
night tonight. Larry Fawcett is my guest. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. And if you would like to talk to Larry and find out what the government is not telling us about the UFO phenomenon, I don't know of anyone who knows more. As you've already found out, he's been to court, all the way to the Supreme Court, in order to get the information, which is the public's information, and get it out to you. Let me give you the telephone numbers if you'd like to talk to Larry. All right, welcome aboard.
All right, how you doing, Bill? I'd like to ask your guest, where do UFOs come from? I mean, is there a is there one specific planet or one specific origin in outer space?
To the caller, I really can't answer that due to the fact that none of the government documentation say any of that. We have information when we were putting the book together. Of course, a lot of the information came from military and intelligence informants, if you will. Our information has it that there are close to 30 civilizations visiting this planet.
Oh, I see. And I guess there's no way of sort of understanding where, you know, if there's more than one civilization or several civilizations that
are... About 30 is what he said, Charles.
I beg your pardon?
About 30 different civilizations.
Oh, about 30 civilizations. Great, so I guess there's no way of knowing exactly which one is visiting us or if there are more than one.
No, I really can't say. And there again, I must strongly emphasize that government documentations that we have in our possessions make no direct quotes as to where UFOs are coming from.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you.
It's always be interesting to find out. Maybe we can talk to them one day and they'll tell us.
Oh,
when
great.
When they feel like talking to the squirrels, which is about what it would be like, I would
think. Well, it's interesting that you make that statement, Bill, because we do have information in our possession that there is an ongoing contact with extraterrestrial civilizations with our military. And this contact has been going on since 1970.
I think I know the one. And they've got their hands full with that one right now. All right, Joe. All right, Charles. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have Steve on the line. Steve, welcome aboard.
Thank you. I wanted to ask your guest if... let's do it this way. Does he have any information about a sighting that occurred approximately 9 years ago over the flight deck of the USS Enterprise?
Yes, I heard about that.
Did you also hear about the pyramid that supposedly was dropped from the bottom side of this UFO?
No, I didn't.
I heard about that. Did the pyramid come all the way down to the flight deck of the Enterprise?
No, it didn't, but it hovered underneath the underside of the UFO for approximately, I think it was 10 or 15 minutes.
Were you there, Steve?
No, a very good friend of mine was there.
Mm-hmm.
My connection with this is that I've had many out-of-body experiences from underneath pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
And last week's guest alluded to the feeling that they had to have some sort of a energy field. And the interesting thing about out-of-body experiences from underneath a pyramid is that you cannot get back into your body without going under the pyramid. If you try to re-enter from above the pyramid, there's an energy field that throws you off to the side. And that connected with what your guest last week talked about, and what a very, well, lifelong friend of mine described to me. He was on the flight deck of the Enterprise at the time of the sighting. And I was just curious if your guest tonight had any information along those lines as far as that sighting goes.
Do you have any more information on it, Larry?
Yeah, we tried to get information on the sighting on the Enterprise by filing Freedom of Information Act requests with the Navy, but they claim that the incident never occurred.
Oh, so they're just flat denying it.
That's right.
So the guys on board were hallucinating.
That's correct.
For several minutes. I mean, we aren't talking 2 minutes. We're talking, he said, 10 to 15 minutes.
Yes, it was a quite long sighting. We've had other people that were aboard the Enterprise tell us about that incident.
Mm-hmm. Geez, I had another question, but that's all right. I can't seem to remember it right now.
It skipped you for the moment.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be here till midnight, so flip back in if you're attached to your mind. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for bringing the Enterprise sighting to our attention. Tonight, Steve.
This is the other question.
You thought of it. Go ahead.
Yeah. Does your guest have any idea as to why they are the government's trying to withhold this? It would seem to me that one of the logical explanations for this withholding of information might be that they're trying to avoid some sort of mass hysteria.
No, that's not the reason. The reason is we're trying to develop the weapons delivery system and duplicating the phenomena, if you will.
No, that's marvelous. Let's turn it all into a weapon.
Yeah, I can say the same thing.
Yeah, there are a lot of things, if you have one of these craft, and we evidently do, and if we can duplicate the propulsion systems or weapon systems, the navigation systems,
we'd have superiority over the world, Bill.
That's right. It gives us a technological leg up, which was greater than having the atomic bomb all by ourselves.
And you must remember that the Russians are going along the same lines. The sightings are only not held to the confines of America. UFO sightings are a global phenomena. It's occurring globally. And we now just find that the Russians are pouring manpower and money into the UFO phenomena.
They want that technology as bad as we do.
Well, sure, they want to learn the same thing that our government wants to learn, and that's how they're being propelled, what sort of energy are they using, and can they duplicate the phenomena. The first one to crack that will have air superiority over the world.
And, you know, the government is very, you must think in these terms too, Steve. If the government ever said, yes, we've got them, and we're duplicating it, and we're going to put that into production, that could certainly prompt a preemptive strike on our ability to produce those things.
That's correct.
Yes. All right, well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Steve. I have your call. Let's see. We have Lee on the line. Lee, welcome aboard.
Hello, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping I won't have to go all the way out and turn off my radio. But what I wanted to ask Larry, that's right. I'm not going to read from the Bible or anything like that. But it appears from things that I've seen there, hints and everything, that there are that there are references to UFOs and visitations to the planet way back in history.
That's correct. UFO sightings go back all the way to Bible times.
Yeah.
You might interpret Ezekiel's wheel as a UFO event occurring at that time.
Well, he was a very good reporter. He just didn't know exactly what he was writing about, but he did the best he could.
They didn't have space eyes in those days, so they didn't know what they were writing about.
That's correct.
And the people who changed, it appears to me, the people who changed the Bible from the references that they understood did not understand, because they didn't have space eyes either. So they left references to Jacob's ladder and the help that was received at Jericho and the pillars of fire by night and cloud by day.
That's right.
That supposedly led the nomads across the desert.
Yes.
Were nothing but spacecraft. Even when Moses went in the mountain, he was burned, it seemed to me, from radiation from the ship.
There's a lot of that, certainly in the Bible. And you talk about the space eyes, some of the medieval painters. If you go back and look at those old cathedrals, you'll see just beautiful paintings of UFOs right there in those classic paintings.
I've seen reproductions of that.
Yeah,
beautiful.
We have a 15th century painting by, I think, the painter Giovanni, which hangs in the Vatican. If you go there, you can view this painting. It's a picture of the Madonna holding the baby Jesus. And right behind her, over her left shoulder, is the painter, whatever sparked him to paint this,
is a UFO hovering over her shoulder.
The three wise men.
Pardon?
The three wise men.
Right, right over her right shoulder is a Roman soldier and a dog looking up at the UFO.
Mm-hmm.
So history is filled with the UFO. It's not a modern phenomenon, as it were.
That's correct. Even the Air Force admits that we found out that they were teaching their academy, the Air Force Academy at one time, in their logs, they had references and admitted that UFO sightings go back almost 50,000 years.
50,000? I'd say more than that.
Oh, yes.
To the dawn of time.
Yeah. That's
correct.
The ancient Sumerian records are filled with it.
You know, let me comment on this from straight from the Bible again about the three wise men and the bright light seen in the east. Now, it appears to me that if there was a light that bright, like a sun shining from the east, that it wouldn't have been dark, number one, in the sky. And it wouldn't have been focused, you know, directed and focused toward any one particular spot. It would just would have shown all over, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I would agree with you.
So it further appeared to me through deduction that it must have been some kind of ship with a spotlight on.
Or at least emanating a great deal of light.
Yeah, well...
Not necessarily a spotlight.
Right. It's been referred that there was a light that followed them and, you know, shone down and
right.
directed their walk or whatever.
That happens out here in the valley all the time.
Yeah. Well, I look up in the sky at night and I see bright lights that would appear to normal people looking in the sky at astronomy or what have you to be a star. But they're too close to be stars.
Most inspection shows otherwise.
They're too close to be stars, which is in effect saying another sun,
right.
like so, which would make it pretty bright down here.
We think it would be.
Thank you
very much for that. Okay?
Thank you, Bill.
All right. And let me see. We have Ron ready to get on. Hello, Ron. Welcome aboard.
Hi. Hi, Bill. I would like to ask your guest if in his research he's ever... read about any sightings in Washington State in the 50s. When I was about 7, my sister said, look, and I looked out our windows in our home, and there was 3 disc-shaped objects over this golf course in Kenmore, Washington in the early 50s, and I just wondered if anybody else saw it. And it was really distinct. I mean, it was just hovering, and then they just took off just like that. And this is really quite a long time ago.
Well, it was shortly before that the modern-day flap started.
That's correct.
In that area, by the way, so... there have been a number of sightings up in there.
Yeah. How about the sightings of cigar-shaped objects? One time I saw a cigar-shaped object.
UFOs have been reported in all sizes and shapes. Cigars, some reported looking like ice cream cones, flying ice cream cones. Some looking like billiard balls attached to one another. A good interpretation of that was what you saw in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the movie, where they showed the various shapes and sizes and so forth and so on in the film.
Yeah, they did a lot of research at APRO to get that information, I understand.
Well, they did a lot of research in all the UFO groups. Center for UFO Studies, which was Dr. J. Allen Hynek's organization, had a lot of input into that film. A lot of the things that occurred in the film itself were based on actual cases, such as the shaking of the mailboxes, the pursuits by the police cars down the highways, which actually came from the Ohio-Pennsylvania chase, involving the Ohio police and the Pennsylvania chase, which was a 90-mile chase, which I participated in, by the way, in investigating that case for the Center for UFO Studies.
As well as the way the little people looked. Those were a pretty good description as the way they've been described, the little people.
Yes, that came from the Barney and Betty Hill case.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
okay, Ron?
Yeah, okay. I just thought I'd ask that.
Okay, very good.
Interesting point to make out. The documentation that we do have in our possession, Bill, also talks about crashed UFOs and alien bodies on ice.
Yes, there seem to be a lot of those. We've had Leonard Springfield on a number of times on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have to get him on again because he always has fascinating new things to tell us.
Yes, Len is the leader in that field along with Bill Moore and Stanton Friedman. Bill wrote an excellent book, which was called The Roswell Incident, which
mm-hmm.
talks about a crash UFO in Roswell, New Mexico. These stories have been around for years.
And while we were into the government in their cases, we did turn documents which talk about crashed UFOs down in New Mexico, and the government retrieved the bodies out of them, which were only 3 feet tall.
Right, and still have them.
That's correct.
We have Ron on the line, or is that Don, excuse me. Hello, Don.
Yeah, I think it's John.
John.
Yeah, hi, Bill.
All right.
Great show.
Thank you.
And I wanted to share an experience with both of you and then ask a question. In the 50s, I was about 13, 1956, broad daylight. There were about 20 of us that witnessed it. A flying saucer came down over our intersection, and it was about 20 stories high. It was a disc-shaped object, and of course, being 13, I didn't think anybody believed me, and I would run screaming up the street to get everybody to come out and look at it, which they did. And it hovered for about 5 or 6 seconds when we got underneath it, and then it kind of went, it kind of made a humming sound and then took off real quickly. Ever since then, obviously, I've been very fascinated with UFOs, and the most intriguing book that I've read and the pictures that I've seen that I'm sure you're familiar with, I would think, is Contact with the Pleiades. Larry?
Yes, very aware of the book, and I have some reservations on that.
Uh-huh. There are two of them, actually.
Yes.
Volume 1 and 2.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, I'm trying to get Volume 2. The question I had, then, is what's the latest concerning Edward Meyer? Is he still...
Edward Meyer?
Edward Meyer.
He's a very sick man.
Uh-huh.
Evidently, in the accident in which he lost his arm...
Yeah.
...is taking its toll now as far as his mental... condition is concerned, and Edward most likely won't be with us much longer.
Sorry to hear that. What is the credibility from your viewpoint, Larry?
Well, I have to look at it in my eyes, and I'm a policeman, by the way. I'm a police lieutenant, and I have been for 15 years now. When the researchers attempted to get negatives from the pictures or access to the material that he claimed that came from these craft that were given to him, he denied the investigators any pieces, if you will, or negatives to the photographs, and that makes me quite skeptical.
Well, they were, I think, the only ones who really had a chance to get that the good negatives were Wendell Stevens and Lee Elders.
Right.
And they were very close-vested about it. We've had them on the show a number of times concerning the Billy Meyer case. In fact, that was the subject of the very first Open Mind show. There's been a lot of controversy to swirl around the case afterwards, but I think a lot of the controversy stemmed from the fact that a lot of investigators were privy to the information.
Right.
And we saw some kind of infighting happening among UFO groups.
Yeah, the book that came out that accompanied it, about the investigation. Have you seen that book?
The Green Book?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's fascinating about that is the explanations, the questions that are asked of the, they call them cosmonauts from the Pleiades star mm-hmm. system, of, you know, the typical questions that people would have of visitors. And the explanations were so logical about why they haven't revealed themselves, why... the tremendous abilities they have can't be conveyed to us because they can't trust us with it, because the same power that would be used to heal could be used to destroy this type of thing. And that's why I found it very fascinating.
See, a lot of problems cropped up with that case. There were people that probed through Billy Meyer's garbage, if you will, and found little models in the garbage.
Oh, yeah.
When he was questioned about these things, he claimed that his sons were building them, and they had nothing to do with the photographs that were taken, but they resembled the photographs.
Uh-huh.
Well, they were building models to see if they could make models that would look as good as the actual pictures did and would withstand testing. And, of course, they could build some good models, and they did. The pictures looked good, except they didn't stand up to the testing. So it was a part of their process of winnowing out the wheat from the chaff, as it were.
Right. Well, great. Thanks very much.
Okay, Don.
Okay, bye-bye.
We're talking to Larry Fawcett tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, and our subject is on the UFO. Larry's book is Clear Intent by Prentice Hall, in which he has gone into some depth about what the government is not telling us. Information that was obtained from the government through the Freedom of Information Act. And it's fascinating reading for you, and I'm confident it'll change your mind just a bit about the reality of the extraterrestrial. Hello.
Hello?
You're on.
Okay. I called about a year or so ago about an incident I had in Washington, D.C. August of 1966.
Okay. Bill, I can't hear her at all.
Okay, in August of 1966, we were traveling, and we were in Washington, D.C., and it was a crowd of people out. And the police were out with guns and everything, and we thought at the time, because it was a lot of racial things going on, that it was a riot or something. So then we went down this fairway, this highway, and it was a UFO about treetop level. And it went up and down and sideways, and it was about as low as the top of a tree.
That was 1952?
1966.
The 1966 D.C. sighting. Do you have any information on that one, Larry?
No, I couldn't hear her at all. Was she talking about Washington, D.C. sightings in 1952?
1966.
No, I don't.
1966.
I remember
it was August the 29th at 10 p.m. because I Spy was on television. I remember that just like it happened yesterday.
All right, she, in case you didn't hear that, you say...
Not at all. I couldn't
Larry's,
very really, just
she
really
was,
hear it, Bill.
She was in Washington, D.C., and what was that, August 29th?
August 29th of 66.
Of 1966, and
yeah.
The police were out, the guns were drawn, and there
yeah.
It was, a flying saucer in Washington, D.C., treetop level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very low.
Was that down near the mall?
Pardon?
Was that down near the mall or just whereabouts?
I don't know where, because we're from California, so I didn't know where it was.
Near the Capitol, I mean.
Yeah, but it made a clicking sound, and it stayed, it was going up and down. It was like a bank, and it would go up, and you can hear it click. And then it will go side by side, and then it will drop back down. And it did it for like 2 hours.
2 hours,
sure. We went somewhere, and we went by another way, and it was still there. And it was spinning.
Something to check on. August 29th, 1966.
Yeah.
Washington, D.C., in the parks around the Capitol.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was spinning. And it made a clicking sound because you could hear it click. And it had lighted windows.
Lighted
and,
windows.
Yeah, and it was low as the top of trees.
Well, that's one to work on, Jackie. We'll dig that one out.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay, Larry?
Yeah, Bill.
Okay, that music means that we're going to take a break. You can go get a cup of coffee, if you will.
Okay.
And we're delighted to have you on the line, staying up late back there on the East Coast to regale us with stories of the UFOs here on the West Coast. Larry Fawcett is my guest, the author of Clear Intent, a must book for your library. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. We'll be right back after the news.
Documents which we learned from the Central Intelligence Agency and later from the Air Force itself, that during 1975, every one of our strategic air command bases along the northern tier of the United States were penetrated nightly during the months of October and November in 1975. There were landings within nuclear weapons storage areas. There were incidences of tampering with missile components at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana. There were scrambles out of Loring Air Force Base with our latest aircraft pursuing these things up into Canada with the Canadian government picking up the pursuit on their side. Now, the public never read about this at all until finally people in and around the base have seen the alerts going off and seen the lights appearing in the skies at night. The press began picking up on these things. When they queried the bases, the various bases that were involved, they were met with flat denials at first, and then were told that what was occurring was that these ultra-secret bases were being penetrated by unknown, unmarked helicopters, if you will. Now, at that time, when we got the response from the Air Force that this is what they were claiming was penetrating the bases, I had wrote a letter to the Secretary of the Air Force asking him at that time what was the fastest helicopter in their arsenal. I was told at that time it was the Chinook 54 SIG, which was capable of 250 knots. Now, we had government reports from pilots which stated that they were pursuing these objects, and the objects would accelerate to Mach 1, Mach 2, Mach 3. We certainly didn't have a helicopter, and we still don't, that can travel that fast.
Not even Airwolf could do that.
That's right. Huh.
Well, they get caught in a web of their own lies, don't they?
That's right. Another interesting case occurred at Malmstrom Air Force Base over the Kilo 7 site, which is just 20 miles outside of the Judith Gath region. Now, we not only depended upon the government documents that we were getting, we seeked out those people that were mentioned in the documents and interviewed them on a one-on-one basis, if you will. And we found out that this specific incident, which occurred over the Kilo 7 site, where the alarms, which are 100 feet underground to the missile site, if you will, in the launch control facilities, began going off. The next thing in line is that they call in what they call SAT teams, strategic alert teams. These are five or six armed personnel, if you will, that are responsible for site security. When the alarms began going off, and by the way, they have no television cameras topside over the site, these guards started to head into the area. As they got to within 1 mile of the Kilo 7 site, they began radioing into the launch control facilities that they were seeing an object, as they described it, as being the size of a football field, circular, hovering over the missile site. Now, when this object was over the site, all...